You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center, and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Thank you very much for coming to this Berkman Center Web of Ideas tonight with Andrew Lee, who's the author of a really interesting book that I learned a lot from, Wikipedia Revolution. So we will, the way this will work is Andrew's going to talk for maybe 10 minutes or so, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less, to sort of set the field, make sure that we're all on the same page, so to speak, about Wikipedia. And then I'm going to ask Andrew a bunch of questions, and then we'll open it up. Okay, so great. Andrew Lee.
All right, thank you. We should all be so lucky to have David here to question question me, because if you ever heard David speak, he's a great speaker, so I hope you get a chance to hear him in person in the full. But thanks again for having me here to talk about this book. This book launched last week, and you know, I got to say, I was pretty excited when the reviews started coming in. Chris Anderson of Wired magazine said he learned a lot about Wikipedia. It was a riveting total page turner. Publishers Weekly gave it some really nice reviews. But every author deserves to be knocked down a notch when they're feeling too good about themselves. So when the Christian Science Monitor came around and gave the book one of their recommendations, I was a little bit surprised to see I'd suddenly been morphed into the wiki expert. So I like being associated with the wiki book, but this is a little bit too close for comfort. So I'm still known as we on the Christian Science Monitor, but I thought it'd be really interesting to tell you about how I came across Wikipedia, first of all, because it's usually the opposite of how most people encountered Wikipedia for the first time. So in 2003, I was looking into the next area of academic research I wanted to do, and I've been studying blogs and online journalism, and I was sitting with Jerry Mikulski, who's one of the first editors of Release 1.0, the legendary newsletter from Esther Dyson. And he said, oh, well, you've absolutely got to see this new site called Wikipedia. And he said, this is a site where anyone can edit any page at any time, and these folks have just come onto the internet and created this incredible encyclopedia. And unlike most people, I heard about the principle first, and I was expecting something, and I went to the site, and this is what I saw, something like this, with a lot of articles about everything under the sky. And as I flipped through page after page after page, I said, this doesn't seem like something that the crowd could have written. And just like in the movie Amadeus, when Salieri was looking through the manuscripts of Mozart and said, I can't believe a person had created this on their first draft, I couldn't believe that all these articles were created by people around the world collaborating on the internet and producing such great work. So over the next few weeks, I was looking more and more at the pages there, and I started using it in class assignments. I started to analyze it from a research point of view, to the point where it became so fascinating a project, I wanted to really study it full time. So the big problem with Wikipedia, as they say, is that it works in practice, but not in theory. Right? What you see in front of your eyes belie what you actually believe can happen with the masses. As you probably know, Wikipedia started not as this wonderful crowdsourced experiment, but as a conventional encyclopedia called Nupedia.com, started by a company called Bomis.com. And the idea was to have a 7-step rigorous peer-reviewed process with top editors, copy editors, and the whole works, and you recruit volunteers online, and hopefully most of them have PhDs or some higher degree. So this was the original vision of the folks for an online encyclopedia. So even though volunteers were found online, they had very high stringent requirements for contributors to Nupedia.com. Well, the big problem was after 1 year, from 2000 to 2001, they had a grand total of 12 articles. All right? And they actually had someone on the payroll to produce these 12 articles. And this is a big problem because they said, this is not sustainable. We've got this complicated procedure. We're just not creating articles fast enough. So what they did was the person in charge of Nupedia, who was Larry Sanger, who was hired as a PhD student and eventually finished his degree while working on Nupedia, They said, we need something radical to at least get seed material into Nupedia. So Larry Sanger and Jimmy Wales said, well, let's try this new thing called Wiki Software. And Wiki Software was created by a computer programmer named Ward Cunningham back in the 1990s. And he wanted to see if there was a way to get programmers on the internet to actually share their best practices and to create an online resource for programmers. And the reason why it's called the Wiki is because he was on his honeymoon in Hawaii and saw the WikiWiki bus, which, as many of you know, is the shuttle bus between terminals in Hawaii, or at the Hawaii airport there. And what we know today as Wikipedia was the result of Larry Sanger, Jimmy Wales saying, let's try this Wiki software to at least get the initial articles written and feed them into this Nupedia process that we have. Well, the thing is, within the first month, they had created more articles by far than Nupedia ever did. And they realized that Wikipedia was not just a way to feed articles in Nupedia. This kind of ambiguous, community-generated working process that the crowd had created was by far more productive and more more reasonable than what Nupedia had produced in a whole year. So why does Wikipedia work? Nupedia actually became so marginal in this new scenario that Wikipedia became the primary project, and now we don't even talk about Nupedia in any major way. So why does Wikipedia work? In the book, I talk about five things. One, that it's free. Now, folks here in Boston probably know the free software foundation started out of MIT, but most people, when they say free, they think of no cost. But free in the Wikipedia sense means that the content is free, meaning that people edit, contribute, and can redistribute the information freely with a free license. It's also an open community. They believe in radical inclusion, allowing anyone to contribute at any time, and to allow for transparency in everything that happens in the community. All the edit histories of all the articles are available at any time for anyone to inspect. At the core, in terms of the policies of Wikipedia, it's neutral. So what is now famous in Wikipedia is what they call NPOV, or the neutral point of view. How do you get all these people contributing over the internet to row in one direction, or at least to work towards having a single article? How do you get co-labor instead of anti-labor? Well, you have NPOV, the neutral point of view, trying to tell people that you need to all accurately represent the different sides of an argument fairly within the article. And it's also timely. Basically, Wikipedia started up in 2001 and hasn't shut down since. It's 24 hours, 7 days a week, people are adding and contributing information to Wikipedia. And it's social. So there are communication channels for people to collaborate, to come up with consensus on policies and article content in Wikipedia. So these five things identify as the things that really make Wikipedia work and which makes it a project that has survived these last 8 years. So I thought I'd just end with one of the most stunning examples of how the community comes together to create content. And I label this as the piranha effect. And the piranha effect is not my terminology. It's something that the French Wikipedians came up with to describe how one little change in one corner of the Wikipedia can actually inspire other changes and create a whole torrent of activity inside the community. So one of the more famous episodes in Wikipedia's history was the addition of 33,800 articles in 1 week. And this happened because an unemployed student was working with Wikipedia in 2003, and said, well, I've got all the census data from the US, and I've added some information about counties, but here I have all the census data for 33,000 towns in the United States. I could add them all by hand, or I could write a software program, what they call a software robot, to inject each and every town into Wikipedia. So literally in 1 week, there were 50,000 articles at the beginning of the week, and there were 33,800 added by the end of the week, meaning that his robot was suddenly responsible for this 60% surge in articles in Wikipedia. Now, well, there was a lot of contention at the time saying, should we have robot-generated articles in Wikipedia? And there was some debate at the time. But what it spawned was quite fascinating. So one of the stories that I told was about a guy named Seth Illis. And he saw these automated articles in Wikipedia. And he specifically saw one about his town in Apex, North Carolina. And he said, well, this is a pretty good start, but it's all numbers. I can add some information about my mayor, about the town statistics, but maybe what I should really do is put a map on there. So he created a map of North Carolina, and he put a little red dot on the map, which showed where he lived. And this is pretty empowering. He created the map, he uploaded to Wikipedia, and suddenly this article that people could look up on the internet had a red dot map with his town. And this is what I wrote about Seth's experience having put this one map on Wikipedia. So here he says, a few keystrokes later, he had added his own handmade map to the article. Now, anyone in the world who looked up Apex in Wikipedia would see his visual creation and know where he lived. Who would be looking up Apex? Probably no one anytime soon, but if another person saw it, it would be worth it. After all, if Seth had visited the page on a whim, surely someone else might. Without having to create an entire website, without having to advertise his new edition, he was able to contribute his knowledge of his corner of the world for everyone to see. For Seth, it was empowering, and he found himself strangely addicted to this new map obsession. And this is him quoting his website, or his page in Wikipedia. Then I decided, what the heck, since I've done that and have the graphics program open, why don't I make maps for every town in the county? That afternoon, I did about a third of the state, and I didn't make any sense to stop there. So like Forrest Gump, I just kept on running. Eerily enough, other people started running too. And before long, nearly all of the user Rambot US Census location articles will all have maps. There's a famous saying in the tech world, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And if there was ever a project that had lots of unhammered nails, thousands and thousands of them, it was Wikipedia. And then this is what eventually happened with his maps. This is how we started out with the dot map of North Carolina. This is what he did in the first week or two after his first dot map. And as you see, about a year later, they had over 50% of the US covered simply by handcrafting maps and other people seeing his work and trying the same thing over and over again with their states. And this is where I further write. There is a special bond that is forged between a maker and his handmade product. Making dot maps may be an act of absurd inefficiency, but the showcase of the human spirit provided inspiration for others. Standing as exemplars, the dot maps encouraged bigger and better things by folks who didn't know such things were possible. It's one reason why Wikipedia is considered one of the most important showcases of the Web 2.0 movement that has started at the turn of the 21st century. Wikipedia is a human-centered endeavor that invites participation on a massive scale. It usurps top-down authority, empowers individuals, and harnesses previously untapped labor of individuals previously isolated in separate social networks, but brought together by the internet. You don't have to be a technical whiz. You don't have to be a computer science degree holder. You don't have to know anything else other than how to hit edit this page and make a fix here or there. So Seth found a calling, and his legacy lives on in Wikipedia's thousands of dot maps. Was it completely free, though, or was there a cost? Years afterwards, Seth has no regrets and is proud of his work. But there was a cost of sorts, he admits. He was spending so much time on the dot maps, it indirectly caused his breakup with his girlfriend at the time. Maps are a tough mistress. So I think that's one of the more fascinating stories in the book. And David, I look forward to some interesting Q&A with you. Thanks.
Sense of what the book is like. It's a history, right. But it's also it's a history told through stories and through people, and without shying away from any of the internal controversies, some of which have boiled over into the public press and become fairly well known. In fact, we should get out of the way right at the beginning. Wikipedia is about neutrality. Are you neutral about Wikipedia?
No, I'm not neutral. I mean, this is something funny that David wrote on his blog after he read the book, saying, I think I analyze it neutrally, but I come out being a big fan of it. I mean, I'm at Wikipedia, and I started editing in 2003. I really think it's one of the most fascinating creations that man has ever made. But it doesn't mean it doesn't deserve some real scrutiny and some criticism as well.
Okay, so obviously you think it's at least important enough to write a book about.
Sure.
So there's an implicit endorsement, at least, of its significance. We'll come back to neutrality, and that may be, of course, something that the group here also will want to ask about, because right. It's at, as you say, it's at the core of what lets Wikipedia work, but it's also one of the most interesting things about it is the way it achieves neutrality and the type of neutrality that it achieves. Right. So I just wanted to ask you right away. There's an origin myth about Wikipedia. Just as comic book heroes have an origins myth, which says something about idealists coming together and deciding to do this experiment in democracy that happens to have resulted, and the glorious result of it is the world's greatest encyclopedia. And that's sort of, you know, crudely put, but that's the myth that we seem to want to believe in our culture.
Right.
Is it right? Where does that myth go wrong?
I think, you know, by telling the Wikipedia story, there was already some debunking of this, right? That it's actually a result of failure that Wikipedia got started, right? It was even both Larry Sanger and Jimmy Wales said at the beginning of, well, after Wikipedia became a success, they both had no idea how to start an encyclopedia other than with the conventional way of doing a peer-reviewed process, getting PhDs. Even though both of them were fairly well-versed in internet culture, and Jimmy Wales had used open source software, which a lot of the principles of creating Wikipedia content are based on the Linux and open source world. Even folks who were fans of the open source software world, it wasn't quite apparent to them that doing an encyclopedia in that style was the right way to go. So only after a year of failure did they actually say, out of desperation, let's try this wacky wiki method to try to create content. And you know, the funny thing is that most people see Wikipedia as an example of democracy creating an encyclopedia. And you hardly ever hear the word democracy being used in the Wikipedia community. In fact, you always hear the mantra, Wikipedia is not a democracy. They try to work in areas of consensus, of assuming good faith, in ignoring all rules in many cases if you think that something really is the way that things should be done. So democracy doesn't really play a lot. In fact, one of the key things in wiki culture is not to do voting. So if we view democracy and voting as being, you know, very closely tied, and in Wikipedia and the wiki culture, they discourage voting because that is using a hard metric to try to solve things rather than having discussion.
And what's wrong with using a hard metric to resolve things?
Well, I think what happens is you have the problem of gaming the vote, of trying to corral folks to just stack the numbers without having to have a meaningful discourse about the issues at hand.
And you end up occasionally with something like, outside of Wikipedia, the vote on whether Pluto is a planet. And so voting on some encyclopedia issues also seems like it might lead to these are things that we don't want to have a majority agree on. We want to see if we can get to consensus on.
One of the most contentious edit wars in Wikipedia, which is, you know, one of the biggest disputes in Wikipedia, was whether to call a city Gdansk or Danzig. Right, so
it's the same city, right?
That's right. It's the same city, but it moved between Polish rule and German rule and being a free city. And over, I think, six different eras, it had been called different things. So there was, over a year, there's this contentious edit war over this article.
An edit war is?
Edit war is when you don't really converge on some kind of neutral point of view.
So and it gets edited one way, the next person goes in, changes it back.
That's
next
right.
Goes in,
and it flips it back and forth between these different revisions. And for the outside viewer, depending on whether they're accessing it at 5:01 p.m. or 5:03 p.m., they might see a different version because the article just keeps flipping back and forth. So that's one issue became the catalyst for lots of different policy changes in Wikipedia, including what they call the three revert rule. Don't flip anything back more than three times. You better settle down and discuss it rather than warring back and forth. So in this case, voting was the only option left because after a year of very brutal edit warring, they finally came up with this massive poll with 10 questions, and they asked the community to come around and vote on whether it should be called Danzig or Gdansk in these different eras. In which situations should it be called this? It was really quite a fascinating thing. And this is the kind of defining edit war in English Wikipedia's history.
And out of this did something. So you mentioned in passing Wikipedia's aversion to rules. And there's also part of the origins myth as well is that it's flat. There's no hierarchy. Every voice is equal.
Right.
In this Gdansk example, or should I say Danzig example, I'm not sure. There's actually, there are three elements that I think we're talking about. One is the voting, which generally isn't liked, but in this case was a last resort.
Right.
There's also, you can see elements of, in fact, a hierarchy, not a flatness, but of a hierarchy in this discussion, as well as the emergence of something like a rule, perhaps, about how to handle similar situations.
Right.
So can you talk a bit about the myth and the fact about of Wikipedia's flatness and the role of rules and the anti-rules and the emergence of rules?
Right. I think one of the things about the Wikipedia community is they believe that you shouldn't have that many rules. You can have guidelines, you can have some things that are held as absolute truths in a community, but that by having too many rules, you start to game the rules in that sense. So some basic things that drive the community are the neutral point of view. Assume good faith is another big thing that the next contributor that comes into Wikipedia could be your most prolific contributor. So be nice to them. You know, don't bite the newbies. Try to welcome folks in the community. But the rules tend to be soft ones, and they try not to make too many hard ones. Now, this is in the early days of Wikipedia, and perhaps later on in the evening we'll talk about the fact that the community has changed quite a bit since the 2001-2002 era, where you were just trying to get contributors in. Today's Wikipedia, there's no problem getting people to recognize Wikipedia and to get people to try to contribute. In fact, the problem is trying to reject vandals and to get rid of bad edits in the community. So that's something that has changed quite a bit, and some people have some concern about whether the community still is as vibrant and as healthy as it was in the early days.
The antipathy towards rules and has a certain, well, you can call it realism or you can call it cynicism, but
right.
You know, that rules tend to breed bad behavior, sort of that attitude towards
right.
rules. And at the same time, this sort of warm-hearted notion, assume good intent, assume
good faith,
good
yeah.
faith of the person that you're arguing with. Nevertheless, the rules one seems to smack of a certain sort of politics. And I'm wondering to what extent, even though Wikipedia pretty much insists that it's free of political bias, certainly in the articles, but even in its structure, do you see elements of a particular political mindset in the structure of Wikipedia as an organization? As an organization, I should say.
As a emergent community or something like
that.
I mean, this is the common lament about Wikipedia, at least English Wikipedia's community, that it's a very liberal or progressive community.
And, or libertarian.
Or libertarian, yeah.
Maybe.
Which kind of go back to the early roots of the folks who started Wikipedia in the first place, because most of them had met on Ayn Rand's objectivist philosophy mailing list, so they were of that stripe.
Yeah. And Jimmy Wales, one of the two founders is mm-hmm. Straightforward libertarian,
right.
Randian libertarian. I think that's right.
Am I yes.
taking his position?
No, I think that's generally recognized, yes.
And libertarianism is pretty common among, in the geek community overall.
Right, so, exactly, right. And that's something that people make fun of Wikipedians for. You know, they'll bend over backwards and look at things seven ways before condemning someone to be a malcontent, because they kind of assume the best of human beings as much as possible, even when they probably shouldn't be given that benefit of the doubt. So there are people who accuse Wikipedia of having a systemic bias because of that, because they're so inclusive of all these folks, and you know the political leaning is towards one way. I think, in general, the articles are of quite good quality. The funny thing is that in response to this, you probably have heard of Conservapedia, which is the attempt to say, well, Wikipedia is so liberal, we need this conservative viewpoint on things, which run from anything from evolution to Republican Party to...
Is Conservapedia built along the same practical principles? That is, basically libertarian, communitarian principles?
No, I wish it were. you should take a look at the pages. They're often written in direct opposition to certain Wikipedia articles, and so they...
But are they, is similarly open to anybody to edit, more structure and hierarchy there?
It's hard to say. There's definitely people in control of more articles in Conservapedia, and they're definitely not as inclusive as the Wikipedia community, I would say.
Yes. So let's talk about the neutrality for a moment.
Right.
The neutrality is such a good practical tool, which one of the things I like about Wikipedia, and slap me down if you disagree, but one of the things I like about it is, in fact, its pragmatism. So that if you need some level of hierarchy or some set of rules, or if a vote is required in order to build a good encyclopedia, then fine, that's what you'll do. The,
right.
the highest value is to build a great encyclopedia. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, there's what they now recognize the five pillars of Wikipedia. And the first one is Wikipedia is an encyclopedia. And that seems quite silly that you have to say this, but it actually isn't, considering how much social activity happens in the community. And there was a point in time back in, I think, 2004, where there was actually a whole gaming lounge in the Wikipedia community, because so many people had so much fun editing and interacting with each other. They actually had like virtual chess games, all these different kind of little side activities on Wikipedia, and they eventually had to shut it down. And it almost seemed like it was pretty cruel to do this to the community, but the idea was, we're here to write an encyclopedia, we're not here to support your, you know, MySpace type activities on Wikipedia.
This also gets reflected in which articles are deleted and which ones are accepted. This is
right.
an encyclopedia, it's not an art project. And even though there's more or less infinite space on the servers, pages will be taken down if they are not appropriate to an encyclopedia, which puts that, I mean, that question is right on, Wikipedia is an encyclopedia, but it's sort of different. It has possibilities that paper encyclopedias don't have, such as including, it's 2.3 million English language articles?
At this point, it's 2.8 million, and growing.
So I didn't check in a couple days. there are these somewhat, let's say, sharp-edged conflicts at Wikipedia between deletionists and inclusionists,
right.
which seems to be an implicit argument over, it's an encyclopedia, but what's an encyclopedia in the digital age?
Right.
What are those two positions, and where do you fall on?
So the two basic sides in the Wikipedia community widely recognized are what they call deletionists and inclusionists. You know, it's almost like in Lilliput, the the big Endians and the little Endians. But
which side of the egg you crack open first, right?
But in Wikipedia, people get pretty heated about this issue. So the inclusionists tend to be the folks who say, well, look, Wiki is not paper. We are not space constrained. We don't have to fill up a bookshelf. Why not have an article about almost anything under the sky? You know, the existence of this article about this obscure topic doesn't take away from your experience of the article about Harvard University, for example. So why not? Why not have it? Let's just let the thing bloom. Deletionists, or exclusionists, as I like to say, because deletionists just don't like going out and striking things. They just have a more exclusive mindset. Their idea is that the value of an encyclopedia is its selectivity, right? That you actually do have a problem if you have, 100 million articles and they're all cross-linked and every word is blue in your articles. That's not a good thing either, right? So, and there are probably not that many things that are verifiable and have reliable sources to make sure those have happened. So the famous example is, should we have an article about what I had for breakfast? Andrew's March 25th morning breakfast of pancakes and waffles, That's the radical inclusionist view. You could have an article about that. It doesn't matter how notable it is, but is it something we should have? Now, the funny thing is, in the early days, I think I would be labeled as an exclusionist or a deletionist, saying that what goes in the encyclopedia does matter in terms of how selective you are, because you just don't want any random things going on inside Wikipedia. They're not verifiable. They're not of high quality. But over the years, I think I've morphed, and I don't think I've morphed that much, but I've become known now as an inclusionist. And I think it's more that the community standards have shifted quite a bit now. So Wikipedia has shifted a lot from the early days where they said, we only have 1,000 articles. We need people to write the article about Massachusetts, about elephants and things like this, right? So let's get people to come in, right? And so many people are flooding in without a good idea of what was appropriate that I probably was of the camp that, let's make sure these articles are set up correctly and that they're properly named and everything. Now, Wikipedia's role with 2.8 million articles is to actually keep out bad stuff. So you notice that most of the controversies in Wikipedia in the last few years have all been really embarrassing episodes about Sinbad dying or Ted Kennedy collapsing in the Senate and the Wikipedia article saying he died, John Siegenthaler being implicated in the JFK assassination when he really wasn't. So these are all very embarrassing things because Wikipedia is so high profile. So most of the policy changes in the last few years have all been about restriction. Anonymous users can't do this. If you write something about a living person, it has to be of a higher standard, what they call the biography of living persons standard in Wikipedia. So a lot of these things in the last few years have all about been about restriction, restriction, restriction. Don't do this, don't do that. And that provides a very different atmosphere than in the early days. So I think that's probably why I'm labeled an inclusionist now, whereas I was a deletionist or exclusionist before, because I think the community standards have changed so that they're much more stringent about what to allow in Wikipedia. I think I pretty much stayed of the same stripe.
So I said we're going to talk about neutrality, and we actually sort of are, but I want to spend just one more question for you about the inclusionist, deletionist, because this is a case, it's sort of a meta level up. It's not about content, it's about the rules or criteria for the content,
right.
And at that level, it's hard to... The concept of neutrality isn't helpful at that level. At the level of an article about you or Harvard or whatever, yeah. At the level of trying to decide is inclusionism or exclusionism the right policy, everybody's neutral enough, sort of, but neutrality just isn't the right term. You can't get on the same page just with neutrality. And so you have something else at play. You have a lot of discussion, a lot of argument. In this particular case of inclusionism versus deletionism, which I personally find just totally fascinating, precisely because there isn't an answer to it. The answer is, well, what would an encyclopedia do? But this is a special encyclopedia. So what does this special encyclopedia do? We don't know. We have to decide.
Right.
There seems to be something really important at stake. And this is an issue that gets some Wikipedians really intensely fired up, very passionate about this particular. And I'm not... Can you put your finger on what it is that gets them so passionate about this particular issue?
I don't know, but it may be useful to point to other examples even inside the Wikipedia universe. So, for example, the German Wikipedia is quite a fascinating example. They have about just under 900,000 articles. And with English Wikipedia having 2.8 million, you'd think that, oh, well, German Wikipedia has a long way to go to meet that 2.8 million. Well, the German Wikipedians are quite happy with 900,000, and they're not growing that fast, actually, because they have a much more stringent standard for what belongs in encyclopedia. And, you know, whereas the English language Wikipedia, you have extensive articles about a fringe character from Star Wars, or you have all this pop culture stuff. The moment a reality TV series shows up on ABC or NBC, you have people writing articles about the contestant got eliminated in week one of Survivor, all right? You would not have these articles in German Wikipedia at all.
Pokemon articles?
No. Yeah, I mean, Wikipedia for the longest time was known as the definitive guide to Pokemon because there was so much written about each of these characters. If you tried to add those same type of articles in German Wikipedia, you get slapped back with prejudice, with a lot of, you know, nasty messages. Not that they think you're a terrible person, but just that's their style, saying, we don't do that here. Please stop adding that article. And I've done this before, trying to add a person that was in the news in the last 24 hours, you add it to German Wikipedia, and they say, nope, sorry, not notable enough, wait another week and see if that person sticks around. And it's funny because as English language Wikipedia users, we love this, right? The moment you watch the news and say, ah, who's that person? You look up in Wikipedia, it's almost always there within an hour or so. And German Wikipedia, it doesn't serve that same role. So there's a more of an academic, more of a traditional view of what an encyclopedia should be. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, because what happens is German Wikipedia has such a good reputation, and they have an organization called Wikimedia Deutschland, that the German government and German libraries and German universities are very interested in working with Wikimedia Deutschland on Wikipedia-related projects, because the quality is that high. I don't think you'd really imagine too many U.S. institutions walking up to the English language Wikipedia and say, you've got those great Pokemon articles. Let's see what we can do with that. You know, so it's a very different dynamic. You know, I think a lot of academics do appreciate where Wikipedia is coming from and what it does, but not quite the same way that the German folks have. So that kind of sheds some light on the fact that inclusion and deletionism varies wildly just from through the cultural lens that you view what an encyclopedia should be for.
So I told you we're talking about this is the neutrality discussion,
right?
Because So I once asked Jimmy Wales about neutrality. I started to object to, you know, postmodern, and he cut me off very politely. He cut me off and said, I'm really not that interested in sort of French philosophy's view of neutrality, which I hadn't even brought up, by the way, but he knew where it was going. He said to me, an article is neutral if people have stopped editing it, if they stopped arguing about it.
Right.
And this is a very practical, pragmatic, operational sort of definition of neutrality, which I like very much, and it's very wise. And yet, it also masks something, because we can get to neutrality, people who are arguing can get to a page that they agree upon after a lot of work in some cases, because there's enough homogeneity in the community.
Right.
And if there isn't, they just don't get to it. And one of them finally breaks off and says, look, this is a liberal Wikipedia, or you guys are anti-religion and we'll never get the truth in here because you're not accepting our views of creationism and your Darwin article is still too positive about it, or whatever. There's an not to mention between countries.
Right. Like
the French article on the history of aviation does not credit the Wright brothers nearly as heavily as the American version does.
Right.
So there's an implied, there's an assumed homogeneity that makes the neutrality possible. Is this a problem? Does this mean that Wikipedia is reinforcing the prevalent sort of domain of discourse, what everybody agrees upon, and is therefore implicitly excluding other views all under the...
I think that's certainly a problem with other languages. Like something I talked about recently was the next 20. So the first 20 languages, or the largest 20 languages in Wikipedia, tend to have fairly well-educated folks and multilingual folks. So especially the case for the English language, right? You span a huge swath of contributors across the world who are English language savvy. And then goes German, Japanese, French, Spanish, Esperanto, Swedish. You know, these are folks who know several languages, have a diversity of viewpoints. The next 20 languages in Wikipedia, you tend to have the language speakers who edit Wikipedia being from the same economic background, the same political sphere, the same geographic area.
Isn't that true in the U.S., in the English language version as well, to some extent? That the creationists, so people who reject the Darwinian account, they're going to go off and do their own version of Wikipedia, perhaps.
And they have. That's conservapedia in that sense.
So neutrality hides a forking, right? I mean, the people who radically disagree, who cannot get on the same page for whatever reason.
Right.
They fork. They go do.
They fork, but they usually create a meaningless fork or a not very linked to fork, or a fork in the deep corners of the internet where no one really sees. Right. So in effect, they fade away in terms of influence.
But that is exactly the price that people who worry about the hidden homogeneity of the community builds Wikipedia. The price that exacts, in fact, is the marginalizing of points of view that are so out of the mainstream that they can't get on the same page.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. And there's been a lot of different groups have accused Wikipedia of having that dynamic, right, of folks who have no choice but to go off to different corners and create their own fringe sites over these things. The funny thing is that Jimmy might have said this as well, where neutral point of view is a term of art and the community fills it with meaning, right? So this is something that most of the things that work in Wikipedia are not razor sharp in terms of their focus. They're vague. They're directions that the community should go towards, and there's a lot of faith in the actual ground troops in Wikipedia implementing them in a way that stays with the spirit of those directives. So neutral point of view is one. Assume good faith. No original research. These are all things that don't have hard and fast rules. So this kind of goes back to your original rules question. You know, hopefully the diverse community will take these into account and create content that is more reliable and more of higher quality than before.
So let's talk a little bit. I don't know what one does about the neutrality depending upon homogeneity. That seems just to be a fact of neutrality. So it's not like I have some alternatives to put forward.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the role of authority, the changing role of authority, which is one of the things that strikes people right away. Being a big-time credentialed professor doesn't get you very far in Wikipedia. In fact, you're not allowed to cite, as I understand it. It's bad form, at least, to be in an argument on a Wikipedia page and say, well, you have to listen to me because I got my degree.
Right. You can try that. You can say, well, I'm a PhD in theology, and the 15-year-olds say, well, good for you. You know, it's you have no more editorial authority than I do in this space, and the quality of the arguments are important. I mean, this is even more interesting in the Japanese Wikipedia. So one of the fascinating things about the Japanese Wikipedia community is that most of the contributors are anonymous. And this is mainly because one of the most popular Japanese websites is 2CH or 2chan, right? And that's very famous for no one having any kind of identity. It's all anonymous, and people can air their grievances about their boss or complain about their relatives, and it's all anonymous. So the internet culture in Japanese, in the Japanese sphere, is very much anonymous, anonymous, anonymous. So the Japanese Wikipedia really thrives on the fact that you can't even tell who's who. You could be discussing things with a professor or a housewife or a 12-year-old kid or whatever. And they debate things on the merits of the edits and the quality of what's going on there. And that's generally the case across Wikipedia, is that it's the quality of the edits and of what you've put into Wikipedia rather than your credentials.
So let's talk about SJ just for a little
sure.
bit.
Sure, yeah.
A famous case, ESSJAY.
Right.
Was his pseudonym.
Right. So the one of the bigger crises that's happened in Wikipedia's history was the user named SJ, ESSJAY, and this person was, I guess, pseudonymous, meaning that you didn't know who he was, but there was a handle or a username that you knew this person by. And on the user page for SJ, he basically said, I can't tell you who I am, but I'm a PhD in theology. I teach at some, academic institution, but if I told you my real name, then I'd get in trouble with my institution, so I have to stay cloaked. But he was a very prolific contributor, and he had tens of thousands of edits, and they're all generally acknowledged to be very, very, very high quality. They were finding vandalism, things like this.
As well as his contributions that seem to reflect his standing as an academic theologian.
Right.
Correcting Latin, he was finding small mistakes in Roman history.
It was quite impressive. And what happened was he got access to become an administrator, and then to the higher levels of Wikipedia Trust, to the point where he had the privilege to actually check the internet addresses of individual users behind the scenes. That's something that only a dozen or so people in the Wikipedia universe had in terms of access. So because it access to private data for people, so. What happens, the New Yorker was doing a profile of Wikipedia and happened to get in touch with SJ, and the reporter, Stacy Schiff, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, called him up, and they did a very long interview. It was quite charming on the phone, it seems. And she wrote a long piece talking about this PhD in theology who couldn't let his identity be known but was this crusader on Wikipedia doing all these things. But what happened was he eventually took a job with Jimmy Wales' new firm called Wikia. And, you got to fill out tax forms, and you got to interact with real people. And so he basically came clean and said, well, I'm this 20-year-old something. I don't even have a college degree, by the way. So this is a huge embarrassment to New Yorker because, they have this, fabled fact-checking organization. Questions came up saying, well, Stacy, why didn't you even ask him, completely confidentially, I need to know your name just to fact-check it? It seems like she never even asked that. So this is a big crisis in the community. Some people said, who cares? He lied to a reporter, but he's still a good contributor. He never used his credentials for anything inside the community. But you had legions of Wikipedians who went back in his edit history and found out situations where he actually did say, in my class I use, this book, and I would stake my PhD on this. Yikes. You could see how much that was worth, right? So there were several instances where he did speak from authority and use that as the way to win an argument.
But was he wrong? Was he wrong on the facts?
Well, the funny thing is he actually did say he used a book called Catholicism for Dummies, which kind of struck you as odd for a professor in theology using Catholicism for Dummies. So Catholicism for Dummies. So anyway, what happened was it was a real soul-searching in the community saying, what do we do with this guy? I mean, he didn't technically break any rules, but it really was a disgrace. That one of the people who is a prized Wikipedian, would lie to the outside world and to a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter about what was going on. So that was a mini crisis in the community about faith in each other in the community more than anything else.
Do you see an increasing role for the use of A, for credentials, or B, for the German system now that allows administrators to mark a page at a particular version level, say, no, this is right. This is a reliable page. You can still edit it, but this is the reliable one, as I understand it.
Right.
Do you see movement towards either of those two things?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that, so the German Wikipedians tend to move forward on initiatives dealing with quality. So with smaller number of articles, with smaller number of contributors, a tighter community of administrators, so the people who are deemed administrators actually have, you know, discussions and mailing lists, and they almost act like a council, whereas in English language Wikipedia, the administrators are viewed as a janitor, saying, okay, you've got the keys to the closet, but don't you dare try to assert your authority over me, right? So the German Wikipedians have started implementing a new feature called flagged revisions. Right now, if you visit Wikipedia, you see the latest version of any page or of any article in Wikipedia. The idea is that what you normally see as inaccuracies in Wikipedia are the latest version of an article that hasn't been checked. So the idea is that why not have a little flag or a little marker that you can put next to the last version of an article that someone has actually looked at for typos, accuracy, vandalism. And if you mark this article, when people look at Wikipedia from the outside world, don't show them the latest article but the latest checked version, which means that you set a floor for how bad an article can be. You don't have to see all the vandalism. So you trade off one thing for another. You trade off quality. You get better quality, but you trade off the fact that they're instantly updated, right? So this is a big question for Wikipedia's, you know, whether they want to implement this. The Germans implemented this last year, and it's been a pretty good success. They say within a year they flagged 80-90% of all the articles in German Wikipedia, which is pretty astounding. And to the outside world, if you visit German Wikipedia as an anonymous user, you're going to see the last flagged revision of an article, not the absolute newest one, which is what you'd normally be used to seeing in English Wikipedia. So there's been a lot of interest in the English language Wikipedians implementing this feature. The problem is it's hard to get the biggest community to come to any consensus on anything, especially something as radical as this, because that means to, you know, to the folks who are going to the number 8 largest website in the world, they are going to see something very different than they did yesterday. The moment you turn this on, they're going to see the last flagged revision, which means that if they're used to seeing the latest information about something, this is going to completely change your expectations. So they did a straw poll, you know, not a binding poll. Voting is evil, again, in the community. So they did a straw poll, and they found out there was a frustrating number of folks who wanted it. 59% wanted it. If you're in the U.S. Senate, that wouldn't be enough. You'd be sitting there with finding one guy to get to change their vote. So it was sitting at 59.
Where's Lieberman?
Exactly. So sitting at 59-41, stalemate. And what was fascinating, if you look at the graph of how it was voted on originally, there's a surge of support, like up to 60, 70, 80%. And then it just trickled down. Well, more people heard of it, whether people said, oh, you got to vote on this thing. It's a radical change in the community. It dipped from, you know, 70, 60, 59, and stayed at 59. So it's a bit of a stalemate right now in the English language community, whether this feature will move forward.
So my last question, I just want to raise the complaint that I hear all the time about Wikipedia, which is students, I don't know why students, but students go to it and they simply believe what's there, and they, to which Wikipedia, and I think Wales replies, it's a good place to start.
Right.
But, well, the fact is that for most of the times I go to Wikipedia to find something out, I'm not going to investigate beyond it. I want to know somebody's, when the person was born, or, you know, which one was Schubert, which one was Schumann, you know.
Right.
I'm not going to go invest. I just going to go there and read, and I'm not going to do the thing that, and if it's wrong, I'm wrong, it's a bad thing.
Right.
So what is it that readers need to do? If you could, what do we need to do to help the readers of Wikipedia take advantage of it, not be fooled by the occasional vandalism? How reliable is it? How scared should we be that most of us are going there and doing, just believing what's there?
Right. No, I agree that the saying that most Wikipedians have is that it should be the starting point of research, not the ending point of research, right? So that should prevent you from making it a citation in an academic paper. The same way that when I was in college, they wouldn't have accepted Britannica as a reference in your paper. You shouldn't accept Wikipedia as a reference unless you're doing specifically a paper about reliability of Wikipedia. So in that sense, it absolutely should be a starting point.
In terms, most people are not going to Wikipedia to do papers I assume, because that would be a lot of papers. A lot of people go on to Wikipedia. We're going because we have some question. We just wanted to answer.
Right. Right.
How confident should we be? What skills should we be learning?
I think the set of critics that say that, oh, these poor 18-year-olds or 16-year-olds are going to Wikipedia and reading it and just taking it as the gospel, this is a big danger. I think it's not really a fair criticism, because I think most of these folks are pretty media savvy. You know, they're pretty media literate. They're not just looking at Wikipedia and swallowing it whole and saying this is the truth. Right? It's a good starting point to find out the truth. The kinds of things that the community has implemented in the last few years, in terms of having requiring sources, if you look back in Wikipedia back in 2003, 2004, you never saw this citation needed tag that you see all over the place in Wikipedia now.
Yeah, and you actually warning notices put at the top.
Right. You even have warning notes saying this entire article's got problems. Just, you know, watch it. There's enter with caution. Then you also have sentences and phrases and numbers where you actually have people there just basically citation needed patrol. They'll look through it and say, I don't see a reference for this, and they just put a citation needed tag on it. So that's like on a micro granular level, you know, you read this sentence with caution, read this sentence with confidence. I once highlighted one article in my Wikipedia weekly podcast where we saw one reference that had literally 15 little footnote things right next to it saying, here are 15 references, because there's such a big edit war going on over it. Someone just went overboard and said, okay, I don't want to edit war over this anymore. Here are 15 separate references for this thing, and it looks quite ridiculous in print, but it's the definitive, I did my research on this thing. So I think the standards have been really improved to increase people's faith in the fact that these things have been referenced and researched. But I think ultimately the stable versions or the flagged revisions feature has got to be put in place in some way. And it might just be, it looks like the trend now is that it's going to be put in there for living persons or biography of living persons, because the big issue is libel right now. You put in a false statement about a dead person, there's less risk than putting a false statement about a live person. That's just the state of the legal affairs right now. So there's a movement afoot to maybe turn on this flagged revisions feature for biographies of living people and start there and see what happens after that.
Good. Thank you very much. Let's... So what questions do you have?
Cool. Thanks a lot for coming. So wikis have been fascinating to me for a really long time. Not so fascinating as to encourage me to edit too much. I'm not really one for the details, but I was inspired to create my own sort of nonprofit website based around wikis. It's actually for open education. And I was wondering if you could discuss some of like the failed wiki projects in terms of wiki textbooks and other like substantive educational materials, and how to encourage people to create textbooks and things like that to sort of bring education into the wiki space.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. The battlefield of failed wiki projects is vast, and it's really quite fascinating to see that. I describe a few in my book. One is the Wikitorials project that was done by the LA Times, which was a real disaster. It was unfortunate, but when anyone hears about Wikipedia, they say, oh, it's this magic of the crowd, and as long as you set up a wiki and come up with an interesting starting point, this wiki magic will happen. And unfortunately, the LA Times learned the hard way what happens when you don't have a robust community with administrators that can fight vandalism, and you put up a, they put up an editorial and ask the community to help edit this very POV style of writing. And you're gonna just inviting a lot of trouble at that point. So they had the most heinous, shock images on the internet show up on the LA Times wiki site. And they shut that project down real fast, and they never went back to that. So what you realize after seeing these failed projects around, people try the wiki system, is that how uniquely suited for encyclopedia writing wikis are. Because encyclopedia writing is very formulaic, if you think about it, right? It's very modular. I call it like a bento box of writing, right? You start with the lead paragraph. You've got stats on the right. You put a biography of the person, where they went to college, external links, categories. It's very structured writing, if you think about it. So it lends itself to crowdsourcing very well, because individual contributions can be aggregated and integrated into the article very easily. Not so much with a novel, with a narrative, with an op-ed piece. So one of the projects that I think Penguin Publishing tried was A Million Penguins. They said, here's a wiki site, and here's the title of the book. Now you, magic crowd, make this wonderful novel for us, and we'll publish it. And it was painful to see that thing develop, if you remember that. So most of the projects that people have tried in the magic wiki style just never made it off the ground. But the wikis that do work, if you think about the ones that you see that work, are gaming guides, for example. Like, here's every little Easter egg in Super Mario Kart. And this is great, because people love sharing their info in a modular way, in a step-by-step guide. You know, a guide is a very modular and structured style of writing as well. So those type, you know, certain types of content lend themselves well to the wiki method. A lot of them don't. So I think a lot of organizations have learned this the hard way.
And there's a way to argue over who's right and wrong. The Super Mario Kart guy opposes some
right. And then, right. And then some folks, they might be better off going back to the original wiki culture. Now, the funny thing is, we're all used to seeing Wikipedia as the most prominent example of a wiki. In fact, Ward Cunningham, you know, the founder of the wiki software side of things, said, you know, pretty much Wikipedia is great, but it's not really a wiki. Because the original wiki concept was to have discussions and conversations on the page, you know, really like a raw bulletin board. And then someone would come back later and try to look through all the conversation and refactor that into a narrative. Like, one person would do that. So some organizations or some projects might be better off looking at the original wiki culture to look at those examples, because trying to use the Wikipedia method is almost like putting a square peg in a round hole. It's that method is really good for only certain types of structured writing.
What about getting people, making people use their full names for attribution with not allowing anonymous access? And I was also wondering, so what took, why did it take so long to have the edit bit on the German Wikipedia, and why, what's happening with that in the English language?
What took so long with what the German?
The German language, you said that there was an edit bit that said that this is the final version, or we won't allow intermediate versions to be defaced. You said that this only the German language one was allowed that.
Oh, you mean the flag version, yes. Flag revisions. Okay. So why did it start in the German Wikipedia? Okay. I mean, there's always been talk in the community of, okay, now is when we don't need the anonymous people anymore, right? So we needed them in the growth mode, but now we're in maintenance mode, and you know what? Those anonymous people are just more problem, you know, they're more problem than they're worth. So let's just start requiring a higher standard. At least use your real name. You know, you need to identify yourselves and provide some kind of proof. In general, I think the initial wiki spirit of Wikipedia dominates is that you don't really know where that next phase of Wikipedia is going. If you cut off anonymous users right now, you may be, you know, slicing off your foot in terms of that next phase of where Wikipedia is going. So I think the anonymous users, it being such a core value of anyone can edit any page at any time, that's really been safe in terms of having anonymous contributors. Even though the people who fight vandalism, including myself, I've done vandal fighting as well, would just love to see anonymous people axed. You know, it would make our lives a lot easier. But on the other hand, you know, you've stunted your growth for the future because you're not as welcoming of a new generation of contributors to the community.
Can you talk about the importance of pseudonymity? There are three things, right? There's anonymity, where you don't know, there's full disclosure of who you are,
right.
and there's this middle thing, like SJ, a made-up name.
Right. Pseudonymous contributors, or pseudonymity.
So what does that add to the mix? It
adds, what it does is it provides a label, an identity that you can converse with. You can converse with this person. You can have some kind of interaction with this person, although you don't know the authenticity of where they're coming from or their experience or any of that.
But you can see all the edits and see if they
You can still see all the edits. In fact, the strange thing is that a pseudonymous editor gives away less information than an anonymous editor. If you're an anonymous editor that never signs up for a username, your internet address is recorded in the Wikipedia database, which tells you what country you're from, sometimes what state you're from, sometimes what company you work for. And this has been a funny consequence with a project called Wikiscanner. And Wikiscanner was a project by Virgil someone, I can't remember. but as a researcher, and they basically said, well, let's look at all the anonymous edits to Wikipedia where IP numbers are there. And he found that there's tons of edits from, you know, U.S. Congress, from Procter & Gamble, from IBM, from Ogilvy, from PR companies, and on topics that they probably shouldn't be editing, and they probably cannot edit neutrally about. So it was kind of a public embarrassment to a lot of folks saying, you know, wait, there are edits to this article from this company about that company, and that's not cool, right? And it was, you know, a classic example of sunshine being the best disinfectant, where he basically just said, here's a tool, and you guys can explore anything you want about anonymous contributors. And I think Wired even had a competition asking their readers, come up with the most embarrassing anonymous editors in Wikipedia, and we'll post them. And you can actually go on Wired and see that. It was a fascinating experiment of crowdsourcing, watchdogging the crowd, which is kind of a funny experiment. Yeah.
We do accept questions from the side of the room. I wasn't pointing at anyone, though. Oh, good.
Hi. Because of the Google book settlement, I'm really interested in how content on the internet is owned by certain companies. And I'm wondering if you think that Wikipedia would have, if it could have been any different if it were a company instead of the nonprofit organization that it is.
Good question. I'll answer the second one since I don't know a terribly large amount of information about the Google Books thing. And maybe you do because you're Mr. Everything's Miscellaneous here. In terms of whether Wikipedia could have been this successful if it was a commercial company, I think there's no way. Because the number of people who contribute to Wikipedia because of the free license and because it was a nonprofit, that was a huge attraction to folks. The same way that you had people contribute to Linux as a free operating system because they knew it wasn't making one company rich. In the book, I tell an example of the Spanish Fork, which was the absolute big wake-up call to the folks who organized Wikipedia in the first place. So in the early days, it was still run by Bombas.com, you know, a commercial company, even though they had a free license. And on the mailing list back then, they were musing, just musing about the fact that maybe there could be advertisements that somehow pay for all this cost, because it was just being paid out of pocket from Bombas.com without any revenue stream. And that just whisper of advertising caused the Spanish community to go ballistic. The fact that they've been contributing their information for free to make the world a better place, to educate the masses, and that someone might profit off of this by putting ads on Wikipedia, they were so offended by even the possibility, they pretty much took their ball and went home. They took all of Wikipedia's, not took, but copied all of Wikipedia's articles, made a side project called Encyclopedia Libre, and convinced almost all the Spanish contributors to leave Wikipedia, saying that Wikipedia is thinking about putting up ads. Now, they weren't that close to thinking about putting up ads, but just the whisper of that was enough. And Encyclopedia Libre was the dominant Spanish encyclopedia project for a long time because the Spanish Wikipedians all left. And Spanish Wikipedia was in the doldrums for about a year or two because of this. So that was a big wake-up call. And even though Jimmy Wales and Larry Sanger said, no, we're just musing. Please come back. This is not something we're seriously considering. The damage was done. And they realized very early on that the commercial aspect of it was really sensitive. And that's why it was eventually turned over to a foundation, because there was no way that a company was going to be trusted long term, and if they had even any inkling of putting a commercial spin on the content there. Yeah. So that pretty much set the tone for the entire community since then. So even though we're talking about now a $6 million budget for the Wikimedia Foundation, where it used to be less than $1 million, fundraising for that $6 million, advertising is not brought up really at all. It's all about everything else but advertising because of that Spanish Fork incident. Do you have any comment on about the Google Books?
Plenty, but we'll go back.
Someone did an analysis, and the number of edits they found were 80% of the edits were done by like 20% of the people. I may have the proportion, it's not exactly right. But then someone else did an analysis of that and said that the length of the edits, that the 20% actually contributed 80% of the content, and the other 80% edits were just, you know, fussing with details. Yeah. Is that a fairly accurate summation, and what do you see the relevance of the bulk of the content being thrown in by a small group of people and the maintenance being done by the larger group of people?
Yeah, I think that the numbers you're thinking about, I think Jimmy Wales said at one point, it was a 80-20 rule, saying that even though it's an encyclopedia that anyone can edit, there's an elite set of users that make up 80% of the edits. And then I think it was Aaron Schwartz who did an analysis saying, well, but those 80% of those edits, a lot of them were just vandal fighting. You're just reverting or saying, oh, let's get rid of that four-letter word from the article that someone put in there. So in fact, it kind of swung the pendulum back to the point where it actually was a pretty wide swath of people who edit Wikipedia. And I think that's pretty close to the truth, is that you do have this nonlinear distribution of who edits Wikipedia, an elite crew. But I would still say, if you look at the curves, the bulk of the articles are edited by a pretty wide range of folks, and not just a elite crowd of editors who, you know, edit 100 hours a week. It is pretty wide distribution there.
I think one of the results of Aaron Schwartz's research was that when it comes to the creation of new articles,
right,
that the vast bulk of them are made by a broad range of people, which right, makes some intuitive sense.
That's right.
More substantial changes also made by the broad group, and then the
right,
formatting changes and the vandals.
Right. I mean, this might be an interesting time to note something quirky about where the community is now. One of the strange things is that we don't really have good numbers in the last 2 years about where the trends are, because there is no kind of authoritative dump or backup of Wikipedia's data as of October 2006. And the reason why is the database is so big, it takes more than a month to do a monthly backup. So this is a big, big problem, because that not only means that Wikipedia is vulnerable in some sense, because you don't have a complete dumped backup on disk somewhere, because it's just massive. Number two, you can't do statistical analysis on it because you don't have the massive database to query against. And then third, that means you don't have the forkability, you know, the ability for Spanish Wikipedians to say, I don't like what you're doing, I'm taking a copy and I'm doing it on my own. That is at risk with the English Wikipedia, because you don't have an authoritative dump of all the data that you can actually copy over to another site right now. And this is not some kind of conspiracy theory on why it's not there. It is just really hard. You know, there really hasn't been a database this big and this actively edited 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in probably all of human history.
We should each download one page.
Crowdsource the downloading. Yeah, exactly.
That's a little scary.
It should make you stand up, sit up straight, and say, whoa, that's a little bit of a dangerous situation. Right?
Is the system administration job still done as it was at least a year ago or so? It was then. It was done by a chat room. There was just a continuous chat, IRC chat, of people who have an interest in this, and that's how it would get done.
Yeah, it's still predominantly volunteers. For a while, it was, I think, except for one paid employee, it was an all volunteer. It was a guy in San Diego or Los Angeles, and then when the sun went down on that side, there was some guy in Australia, and then the sun went down, there was a guy in Europe, and just kind of 24 hours, there were people pitching in on IRC, and they would, you know, they all had logins on the computers around the world where the servers were, and you pretty much had a 24-hour tech support or tech monitoring just because you had volunteers around the world.
IRC is just a chat room. It's just very casual.
IRC is like the most basic chat room back in 1980s technology, yet it's the backbone of a lot of Wikipedia communications because it's so simple and open. All right.
Yeah, I have a question. You mentioned a bit about neutrality, and I kind of felt like you skirted around one issue, and that was sort of the Citizendium or the Larry Sanger, you know, Jimmy Wales split. And I'm really curious what your research turned up in this, because you mentioned them synonymously for a while here, and I'm kind of curious, you know, about the rift or, you know, their editing. It seems like Wales would be more the inclusionist, and Sanger would be more the deletionist, sort of more the German model of Citizendium. But just some comments on that would be nice.
No, it's a good question. In the book, I do address a lot of these things. I don't shy away from saying that, you know, they have different viewpoints and they went their own way. In fact, the schism is a little bit less about inclusion and deletionism. I was kind of surprised during the research of the book that everyone paints Larry Sanger, because just as a brief introduction or a brief primer for the folks in the room, you know, at some point, Larry Sanger ceased being a paid employee of Bomis, and as a paid person who worked on Wikipedia, he had to find another job, and he wound up not spending much time on Wikipedia. And then he wrote a lot of essays on the side that kind of encouraged Wikipedia to become more elitist, you know, saying that I set up, and he did, he set up most of the rules that Wikipedians know about, assume good faith, ignore all rules. If rules make you nervous and prevent you from participating in the community, just ignore them. Just plunge in. We just need your help. You'll figure out the rules later. These kind of things were all, you know, created by Sanger, and he was very inclusionist in that sense. But after he started, you know, criticizing some of the things happening in Wikipedia from the outside, a lot of the Wikipedians who were, you know, working with him in the early days started seeing him as a pariah, and I think that's a little bit unfair. And they kind of saw him as an anti-Wikipedian. And the funny thing is people see this as Larry is a deletionist and Wikipedia is an inclusionist because Larry started this side project called Citizendium saying, it's Wikipedia done right. You know, it's Wikipedia with a layer of expert authority where you give people with PhDs and higher level degrees an extra slice of privilege. But he still wants people to contribute anything that they can. And the funny thing is, during the process of researching it, I kind of had the same sense of Larry as being the deletionist guy, and that's why he did this thing. And I started talking about Pokemon articles or something. He goes, no, you absolutely should have them in there, in Citizendium, as long as they're maintainable. It's fine. So his criteria is maintainability, not necessarily this, you know, highbrow academic sense of should Pokemon be in the pantheon of human knowledge, right? So that was quite fascinating to see that. I mean, he's got a very complex argument about what he views Citizendium as, but he really does believe that there's a lot of BS in Wikipedia in terms of people bending over backwards to, you know, try to rehabilitate a troll or try to turn a vandal into a productive member. And he just said, just cut that out. It's just such garbage. Let's just get working with some experts who can cut through the junk. And a lot of volunteers. I mean, and we'll see what history will say about that, because Citizendium is still a much smaller project than Wikipedia. But, you know, we've got a long way to go to see what happens. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
So you emphasized several times that voting is evil, so I would like to get your opinion about the upcoming vote about license migration.
Oh, license migration. That's how many people think voting is evil? No, I'm just kidding. License migration is a very interesting thing in Wikipedia because we use the term free license kind of very loosely, but just kind of an accident of history, Wikipedia has a kind of non-ideal license. It's called the GNU Free Documentation License. And, you know, this was crafted by Richard Stallman just down the road here in Boston. And originally it was for computer documentation, printed computer documentation. And it really wasn't meant for pages like Wikipedia that morph, have multiple authors, or edited in a wiki style. It's just that Creative Commons wasn't done yet. And Wikipedia was launching and they were using this thing called the GFDL, GNU Free Documentation License. And it's not really ideal because it's got some really weird, quirky things about cover pages and, you know, invariant matter, and it just doesn't really work in a wiki context. So over the last year or two, they've been trying to migrate GFDL over to use a Creative Commons license. Now, it sounds kind of weird, but all the contributors over the years have all licensed their stuff. You know, when you edit a Wikipedia page, you save it. It says at the bottom, you agree to license this under the GFDL. So every saved page in Wikipedia, the users, anonymous, pseudonymous, named user, has saved it with this GFDL license. Now, if you want to move it to another license, how are you going to do this? You have to contact all these people who ever edited Wikipedia and get their consent? No, that's impossible. But what you probably didn't realize is when you saved your document, you didn't just save it under the terms of can copy, can modify, can distribute. You actually designated the Free Software Foundation as the guys or the people who can morph that license in the future. So when you agree to that license, it said, I agree to the terms of this license and any future versions. So the Free Software Foundation could change the next version of GFDL to say something a little bit different. And that's what they're doing now. They're trying to say there's a new version of the GFDL that is compatible with the Creative Commons licenses, which I think are a little bit more familiar and well-known to the outside world. So that's kind of what's happening right now, is that they've allowed for this license in Wikipedia to morph over to a more friendly license in some sense. Is that your question in terms of what's going on?
What do you think about
Right. So the so related to this is that this migration is now up for a vote. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. What do I think about the vote right now in terms of what's going on? I really don't have any opinion. It's just such a messy situation in my mind. I still find the whole explanation of how to move from one license to the next one just really strange and confusing to me. I mean, do you have any opinion about what should be happening? I don't know.
Well, just one.
I have been following it in the last few months, so I don't know what the status is right now.
Well, I think the new license, the GFDL, says that the site maintainer, the site administrator can choose a new license or can do the relicense to CC by SA 3.0. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, they actually don't have to do this vote, but they have to do a vote. Otherwise, it will be a riot, right? maybe I'll just ask you what would you vote? Like, would you vote for the transition or not?
So let me step in just for a moment. So the issue is a GFDL license that everybody has implicitly agreed to. Everybody's contributed their efforts, their time, and their content.
Right.
Creative Commons is within broad swaths of this community is extremely well known, and it's an alternative license
right.
that provides more access than traditional copyright does. And the move from, as you just explained, the GFDL allows that license automatically to migrate to the new GFDL, and the new GFDL, and if I'm getting this wrong, you'll correct me, the new GFDL says, well, the owner of the site can actually move it off of GFDL to something like, well, to somebody
right.
else, such as Creative Commons. So if this vote passes, then the new GFDL, the terms of that allow the license to migrate to Creative Commons,
Creative
which is
Commons.
A more familiar one to much of the community.
That's my understanding, and SJ, you may know better than I do, because it's confusing as heck, because what happens is they actually wrote a special clause just for Wikipedia into this new license. And my gut that's right. And my gut feeling is, just like most laws, any laws targeted to an exact situation for an exact purpose, for an exact constituency, are normally not good laws or not good provisions. So that's just my gut feeling. I can't tell you this as a lawyer or a scholar or anything. It's just my gut feeling says that's a really weird thing to do, but I'm really not sure what the result is going to be. I don't know. So
this is actually just a fascinating case where a community that exists through a certain ethos, ignore rules, voting is evil, you go up a level where it has to do something constitutional, has to do
right.
something that has to do with governance of this community.
Right.
And the rules that work for governing the normal activity of the community, and this is generally true, don't work all that well when you go
right.
one level up.
Right.
And so there's
you're talking about legal matters in a community where legal matters are generally shunned or even I would say disrespected in that sense. So it is quite a fascinating conundrum.
It's quite a law-abiding community, right?
It's,
the rules
of yes.
copyright material.
That's true.
Very, very strict.
But for them to be this, you know, to initiate this movement,
get me out of trouble.
To initiate this is a very odd role for them to be in. I think you're right. Yeah, but this really does bring up a bigger question: is some people are looking to the Wikimedia Foundation, the nonprofit, to drive this. But that has problems on its own, because that means you're looking to professional paid folks to make these very important, probably community decisions, and you have this dynamic as well that some things that were decided in the community, some people are just willing to cede to the larger paid foundation to do, and some people think that's a dangerous move as well, that these should stay community matters.
Will Wikipedia survive this crisis?
I think it will survive, but I think it's a big question mark what, at least for the English language Wikipedia, at 2.8 million articles, you can't ever say that the sum of all human knowledge is finite. It's not. But all the low-hanging fruit has been picked, right? The article about dog, cat, Massachusetts, United States, Canada, they've all been written. They were written a while back. We're kind of in a maintenance mode in English Wikipedia, and the nature of the community that maintains an encyclopedia is very different than one that revolutionizes the creation of an encyclopedia. And I don't think the community has really faced up to that fact, that they think this is just going to be this utopian, you know, community that keeps moving forward forever and ever and ever. But we saw back in the first quarter of 2007, the growth has just started falling. Right. Now, we're not even talking about the growth has fallen off. The number of active community members is actually going down right now. And that's not necessarily the sign of a colony collapse, but it means that we're filling up the sum of all human knowledge. And from here on out, it's small additions on top of this 2.8 million articles. And
contents of Locker 276 at Brookline High School.
Right, exactly. Or the next Pokemon episode, or next Pokemon character is going to be up there. But, you know, the previous 2,000 have already been cataloged. And this is something I don't think the community has considered, and it's not clear a, you know, emerging community can really consider something as monumental as this shift towards maintenance. You know, it might just be that it just morphs and becomes a bunch of caretakers in Wikipedia.
So what got us to the exponential growth and arguably the greatest English language encyclopedia, what got us there may not be the right set of tools and conditions and circumstances for moving ahead.
Right. Which is why I think the flag revisions is probably inevitable, right? Because the next task for Wikipedians is not growth, but maintaining quality. And the most prominent tool right now is that flag revisions feature. And the German Wikipedians have been the ones who pioneered that and have showcased how that can happen.
So let's take a couple more questions.
Yep.
And wherever.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how the power structure of Wikipedia evolved? Because on one hand, it seems to be a very flat organization. On the other hand, decisions do get made. Somebody decided to shut off the social network site where people play chess, for example. So who makes that kind of decisions? How can people of the community become one of those decision makers?
The number of positions of privilege in Wikipedia have grown over the years, but they tend to be more the technical tools rather than any kind of editorial oversight or any areas of editorial oversight. So although there's administrator, which means that you can actually block users, but there's very narrow situations where you're allowed to block users. You can lock articles so no one can edit them for temporary, as a temporary means for combating vandalism. But you also have things like bureaucrats, stewards, and these very fancy titles, which means that you have the technical means of promoting people up and down, but the actual permission to promote people up and down are all community decisions. So in that sense, it has stayed relatively flat. There are no hard metrics saying that this is a 10,000 edit user or a 20,000 edit user, and they know more about what's going on than anyone else. Although probably users in the community do take that into account when trying to figure out whether to cooperate or not cooperate with someone else's edits in there. So I think that has stayed pretty flat in the organization over time. So I think that is something where just the number of edits you make, the number of activities you engage in, are part of the social capital that you build up in Wikipedia. And it's intentionally left vague so that you have to interact on a human-to-human basis and not just look at, you know, like an eBay star rating or your Amazon ranking or something like that. It's a matter of you've got to spend the time to know the community and to feel around the community who's credible and not credible. So it's intentionally left kind of hard to know.
Yeah. One last question in the back.
Very good with this. Fine. Okay. I found very curious how the different forks, like in terms of content between the various language versions, exist, and the future of that as far as you're saying the English version is sort of it's going down. As far as the number of edits, you know, we're sort of reaching a peak, and you know everything's sort of documented, and the rest is going to be culture and current events. But it seems there's probably a lot. I don't know as far as how big the scale is of content that is available in other languages but not in English, and how Wikipedia could progress as an encyclopedia of more of all global knowledge instead of having all these divides.
Right.
If there's incentives for, you know, translating, you know, content from other languages, as well as having it be a very good education tool for both people, English speakers and non-English speakers. We have all this content in English that's not available in the other languages.
You know, I think you make a good point, and it's too easy to view the 2.8 million articles in English language as being, you know, the superset of everything, and then that should be, you know, the standard against which every other language should be measured. And there's plenty of missing stuff in English language Wikipedia about Chinese history, Chinese arts, Chinese archaeological sites that Chinese Wikipedia has pretty long articles about, and English language has, you know, one sentence. So there's a lot of work to go from other languages, which probably have a better knowledge base for these topics, to be translated into English. And I think there's a lot to be done there. The problem is, it's the low-hanging fruit thing, right? To get those types of activities going, you suddenly need bilingual folks, and you suddenly need a lot of tools to try to discover which articles are good in one language and poor in the other language and map between them. But something that's just been fascinating in working with the Wikipedia community is that you have lots of smart people who write software to try to bridge these gaps. Right? And I met a lot of them early on in the book research about software authors who are really interested in trying to bridge the gaps between different language groups. And you know, for us, it's easy to think of English, Chinese, English, German, but what about Portuguese and Kazakh? You know, what a strange pairing. There's not a lot of interplay in there, but you have a lot of software programs that actually are doing these kind of strange comparisons across languages, and they'll find some interesting results there, I think.
You don't think the Wikipedia Foundation itself is going to try to work towards that? They're going to leave it as it is, sort of,
let the
communities figure it out?
I mean, that's something that they'll have to figure out in the future. I think the Wikimedia Foundation will try to be the engine for raising funds to do these types of things. And then there might be some kind of competitive or grant proposal in the community saying, you know, send us your best ideas, and we've got a pot of $1 million to tackle these problems. But already the foundation has done a pretty good job of finding money to fund some problems that are, you know, in the commons side. So Wikimedia Commons is a repository of images, multimedia, audio, and you know, they've got some money there to try to come up with more better illustrations in Wikipedia, and that's something that there's actually cash for Wikipedians to spend money on to try to up the quality of original illustrations in Wikipedia. So the foundation has been pretty good in trying to get grants and funding to do to fill in the missing pieces of where the content is.
Andrew Lee, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks.